battle to protect. Network neutrality is raging. Millions of people are up in arms over the proposed merger of AT&T and T-Mobile because it will leave just two large companies in control of the internet and mobile broadband. Tech experts insist the merger will create higher prices, poorer service, the loss of thousands of jobs, and most importantly, threaten free speech and openness on the wireless web.
AT&T has been fighting hard to convince the FCC to allow the merger, and they've aggressively courted dozens of civil rights groups across the country to endorse it by promising increased functionality and speed, despite their dismal past record. Today, the U.S. ranks 15th in the world in internet speed and access, behind most European countries, South Korea, and Japan.
One unusual LGBT rights group endorsing the merger is the Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation, or GLAAD. Their support of the merger is seen by many as a misguided attempt to curry favor with board members and one of their largest sponsors, AT&T.
Listen as we talk to Timothy Carr, the campaign director for SaveTheInternet.com, a nonprofit coalition of over 2 million people seeking to protect internet freedom.
Daniel Villarreal, Queerty's New Day editor covering the story, and Jarrett Barrios, the president of the Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation, about the group's controversial support of the merger.
Listen as we try to convince Jarrett Barrios and GLAAD to reconsider withdrawing their support.
Plus, will the negative backlash over GLAAD's support of their corporate overlords overshadow its important work with traditional media creators?
And what your internet experience will look like in the future if we lose net neutrality.
I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun. Today's show is brought to you by generous support of fabulous listeners like you.
We really can't do the show without your support, so please visit our website, feastoffun.com, and make a donation. Buy a t-shirt.
Your financial support makes all the difference.
Thank you.
We begin today's show with Daniel Villarreal, the New Day editor for Queerty, who's been covering GLAAD's controversial support over the AT&T and T-Mobile merger. Daniel, are you there?
Sí, es mío.
You are kicking butt on Queerty. Congratulations on your... Is this a new job? You're the daytime editor?
Yeah, I used to be a contributor, and then when they came back through Gay Cities, they hired me on as day editor.
Fantastic. You've done such a remarkable job on covering this AT&T, T-Mobile, GLAAD 10-car pileup. Can you explain to the listeners what exactly is going on here?
Basically, a little earlier last week, I think near the end of last week, GLAAD made a statement saying that they support the AT&T and T-Mobile merger, which basically would be the merger between the second and fourth largest telecom provider in the United States, kind of creating, it would just be like them in one corner and then like Sprint, Verizon in another quarter. So basically a duopoly in telecommunications. So GLAAD came out saying, yeah, you know, we support the merger. Everyone like on the gay blogosphere was like, why is the Gay and Lesbian Anti-Defamation League making a statement on a corporate merger that has nothing to do with defamation whatsoever? And so, you know, a lot of blogs took them to task just saying, you know, why would you bother? You know, GLAAD came back saying, you know, oh, we've commented on mergers before. We talked about, you know, the NBC merger earlier. You know, but at the time, and the NBC merger had a lot more to do. Like, NBC is an actual channel with like gay characters on it, and they had. Let's see. Sorry, one sec. They had. Let me find this. Oh yeah, they had a. It was against the NBC's merger with Comcast because of NBC's poor representations of the gay community at the time, and so they contacted the FCC about that merger to, you know, stand against it. But these telecom industries aren't really known. I mean, for, you know, T-Mobile and AT&T aren't really known for showing depictions of LGBT people. So everyone in the blogosphere wanted to know, why did you bother commenting on this? And up till now, they haven't really responded with a great answer.
I can't believe that, you know, GLAAD wouldn't be familiar with Lily Tomlin's portrayal of Ernestine, the evil phone operator. And, you know, so that every gay man should know that giving the keys to the kingdom to any telecommunications company is a bad idea.
Too much power, absolutely. Although, to be fair, I don't know which telecom industry that Ernestine worked for.
I think it was actually
Ma Bell.
It was AT&T.
At the time, it was the only telephone company around.
But Ma Bell became AT&T.
Yes.
You know, it was one of the first
companies.
It was
one of the baby bells.
Yeah, it was one of the baby bells. So technically, you know, I'm wondering if Lily Tomlin's going to weigh in on all this.
We should call her up. Let's ask her on Twitter.
Let's hope so. You know, I mean, she's now an out lesbian, you know, so it'd be nice to have some other gay voices on this, especially entertainers.
You said that it's a case of secret backroom circle jerking because GLAAD has an ex-AT&T executive on their board.
You know, I did say that initially, and I think that's something that I actually overstated in my first column. You know, they have been underwritten, you know, in the GLAAD Awards, and there has been a donation in the past of, you know, $25,000, and there also is currently an AT&T executive sitting on their board. But their board has, I think, somewhere around like 32 to 35 people. And considering the millions of dollars that GLAAD is used to working with, the idea that a single board member and, you know, $25K being able to influence, you know, their decision on this, I'm not entirely sure it adds up. It might. Maybe they're trying to curry favor with AT&T, seeing as they're going to be number one if this merger goes through. But they've also aligned their statement with saying that the AFL-CIO and that, like, American labor unions are really behind this decision, too. Mm-hmm. And so I'm wondering if they're trying to curry favor with that group as well.
No, they've basically gotten the AT&T T-Mobile merger has gotten the endorsement of probably, I would guess, over 50 grassroots organizations, both LGBT and non-LGBT. But in a lot of ways, those organizations, they're almost kind of like raising their hand saying, hi, we're the big dummies over here.
Right. Everyone's jumping on the bandwagon now, you know?
Well, it's because AT&T is, you know, financially involved in a lot of these groups. And so these groups are wanting to support their donors. Why wouldn't they?
You know, and as I said in the column, I mean, they're definitely the Moby Dick of lobbying, and millions of dollars, you know, go into them affecting legislation. You know, but for me, this really comes down to two issues with which GLAAD still hasn't really addressed very well. First off, they should have commented right out of the gate why they were commenting on this merger to begin with. And that's not something they did until a lot of people started bitching about it and saying, like, hey, why are you commenting?
Well, their support was it that it's like, almost sounded like an ad for AT&T.
The service will be better.
New, thicker, richer lather. You know, faster, faster, and more fantastic.
Well, you know, and that's okay. But the truth of the matter is if they're a defamation organization, then at least have a bit in your statement saying how this is going to help you in your aim towards their self-reported aims towards empowering real people to share their stories and hold the media accountable and help grassroots organizations. They didn't address any of that in their original statement. They talked mostly about labor and how this was going to make for better, you know, web communications or better communications. So they should have put that initially in their coming out. But the other thing, they haven't really addressed net neutrality. They've just said, hey, you know what, we don't support AT&T. They even bungled that. Apparently, there's like a January 4th and a January 15th letter that GLAAD sent to the FCC. The January 4th letter basically said, hey, you know what? We're all for AT&T's stance on net neutrality. And AT&T's stance is that, you know, ultimately they want wireless communications to have paywalls and data caps. So they were like, you know what? We're totally behind it 100%. Then on January 15th, Jarrett Barrow sent another letter that said, oh, you know what, that last letter, it wasn't me, it's not even my signature, totally weird, okay, so that's not me, we don't stand by that. But he didn't articulate what their actual stance on net neutrality is. They still haven't. I talked to Richard Ferraro yesterday because Dan Savage raised the question, well, if GLAAD, if someone sent this fraudulent letter and forged you know, various a signature on it. Why didn't they do an investigation? And when I talked to Rich Ferraro, he said that basically there's this whole internal process where GLAAD, you know, sends off these letters, and that basically the letter was sent by Berrios's, you know, executive assistant, you know, without kind of his okay, and then, you know, that when it got out, you know, the assistant didn't note up to it, and that, you know, Berrios just sent that other letter, you know, and it's just like, really? And if that was a reason, like, why didn't they say that in the letter? Why did they say, oh, it was forged and we don't know how it was sent? Like, just say, hey, my secretary messed up. Sorry, we didn't mean to send that out. This is what we actually think about net neutrality. And they still haven't done that.
Well, we're actually going to be talking on today's show to both Jarrett Berrios, the president of the Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation, and also to Timothy Carr, the campaign director for Save the Net, a coalition of 2 million people who have banded together to protect internet freedom. So let's talk to Timothy. Let's call him up. One ringy dingy. Two ringy dingies.
Hello, this is Tim.
Hi, Tim. This is Fausto Fernos.
And Mark Fillion from Feast of Fun. How are you today?
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
We're doing fantastic. We want to applaud all your work that you guys are doing with Save the Net and fighting for net neutrality.
Excellent. Thank you.
Real quick, can you explain to our listeners, maybe who may not be familiar, what is net neutrality and why does it matter?
Well, net neutrality is a fundamental and founding concept of the internet. And when about 40 years ago, when a lot of engineers and technicians were putting together this network that we're all now so familiar with, they made a decision about the way it would operate. And that decision was that all you needed to do to get on the network was to simply log on, and that you, as a participant, could then connect to anyone else on the network. It sounds like a fairly basic concept.
It makes a lot of sense. I mean, how else are you going to do it?
Yeah, right. When we go online, we assume that we can just basically put in any website that's out there and go to it and have an open connection to that website, be able to share information with others without a gatekeeper, without our internet service provider, whether we be buying our internet connection from a cable company or a phone company, without them telling us that we can't go to some site or others. Well, what's happened in recent years is that a lot of these companies actually want to make that decision for us. For example, if you wanted to use Google as your search engine and your internet service provider decided that they would rather have you use Yahoo or their own search engine, they are now proposing that they get to make that decision for you, to force you to use one website or one service over another. And that is a fundamental violation of that net neutrality principle, the principle that lets us control what we do and where we go every time we go on.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't AOL try to do that with their subscribers in the early 90s?
Yes, they did. I mean, AOL is a classic model of a kind of managed internet experience. It's where your provider thinks they know what's best for you, and they make it difficult. AOL at that time made it difficult for you to get on the internet and to go where you wanted to go. They would rather, you know, you use their email service for your email checking. They would rather you read their news service rather than going to websites like NewYorkTimes.com or you know, depending on your politics, to Daily Kos or to Red State Digital.
Or FeastOfFun.com.
They knew what was best for you. It's kind of an internet for dummies.
Sure.
And the problem is that we're not that dumb. In fact, a lot of us like making all of our own decisions and where we go and what we do, and we want to preserve that freedom of choice.
So, considering that the internet, in many senses, is the backbone of a lot of telecommunications companies, why do they want to mess with something that's working to provide something to the public that already has been proven to be unsuccessful and undesirable?
They want to make more money than the money they make from simply selling you an internet connection. The contract that we have with our internet service provider right now is basically this. You know, I'll pay you $40 for a high-speed internet connection. Some people pay more for that, some people pay less. And you'll simply get out of the way. You will give me that connection, and you'll get out of my way so I can go wherever I want. Well, they see what has happened in the last couple of years is more and more people are watching video via their internet connection. They're listening to radio and listening to music via their internet connection. And basically, as all media converge online, you know, you're reading newspapers online, they're saying, well, hey, you know, we can get more out of this than just selling you a connection. If we start to decide where you want to go and you know sort of capture your clicks, we can then make more money, and that's the business that a lot of them want to get into. And what we're doing at Free Press and through a coalition that we have called SaveTheInternet.com is we're making sure that internet users have a voice in that decision. That our policymakers in Washington and others are aware that they can't simply allow these companies to overhaul the internet without our say.
Well, how would they make the money? They would charge you for, like, let's say, using a Netflix account, or charge you extra if you wanted to, you know, watch something on YouTube?
Yeah, that's exactly how they want to make money. They want to go to YouTube, or they want to go to Yahoo's search engine, and they say, hey, if you pay us this much more money, we will prioritize you on the web. You know, if you look at a company like Comcast, which has tens of millions of broadband subscribers, they basically want to ransom those subscribers to these big companies and say, you know, instead of going to YouTube, you know, we can prioritize, you know, Acme Video streaming service, as long as Acme Video streaming service pays us a special fee, and we'll create a fast lane that connects them to you while degrading YouTube. So it's really about power. It's about taking away the user's ability to choose for themselves. And what is so important about the internet, and it's something that's been made glaringly evident in some of the revolts that have been going on in the Arab world over the last couple of months, is that it is not simply a communication tool. It is a tool of political empowerment. And if you take choice, if you take our ability to speak freely and connect with others away from us, you're not only hampering our ability to communicate, you're also stifling free speech, you're stifling our ability to be political actors, you're stifling people's ability to be economically, you know, engage economically and innovate online and create new businesses. So there's a lot of issues at play here.
And so for example, LGBT people, gay and lesbian people, the ability to access vital information that our communities need to hear each other's stories on a one-on-one level is something that's very much threatened by the loss of network neutrality.
Yes, there is. I mean, a lot of the people who are involved in organizing others around a lot of issues that are important to that community, you know, rely on an open internet in order to reach people and share information. I mean, there is a threat of political censorship when you lose your ability to choose.
So why would network neutrality, it's being characterized by some political organizations as controversial. It seems like it would be a no-brainer that everybody, every politician, every single citizen in this country would want to have and keep network neutrality because of the fact that regardless of who you are and what political persuasion you have, your voice can be heard on the internet.
Well, you know, it seems like such an obvious choice. Right. It seems like I guess you would call it a no-brainer that this principle of net neutrality is what is key to the internet's success and key to it really being a revolutionary tool for free speech.
Yeah.
But the problem that we are facing right now is not so much where the people stand on this issue, but where policymakers stand on this issue. And it just so happens that some of the companies that control internet access in the United States, companies like Verizon and AT&T and Comcast, are very powerful players in Washington. AT&T, for example, spends more money on political campaigns and spends more money on lobbyists than any other company in the United States. And that sort of financial clout translates into political power. And what they have managed to do is to stop up all efforts at the Federal Communications Commission and in Congress to make net neutrality the rule of the road. So this is a sort of a classic David versus Goliath battle, with David being the millions and millions of people who support net neutrality, and there are millions of us. We submitted 2 million letters to the FCC last year from people who cared about this issue against a giant, colossal set of corporations who unfortunately have a disproportionate power over our political process.
I like to think of that metaphor more as like King Kong versus the city. You know?
Exactly.
It's not like a, you know, it's not two equally matched or even near, it's not two individuals or two entities. It's a monster against the population.
Right. And the challenge for advocacy organizations such as mine is to educate people, organize people, and give them a voice in the political process that acts as a counterweight to all of the money that is being spread around Washington.
And now front page and center on SaveTheInternet.com, it says, "Don't believe AT&T's fairy tale. Tell Washington to stop the merger." And right now, AT&T is trying to merge with T-Mobile, and what they're saying will improve the wireless networks that we can have access to and help them provide faster speeds to the consumer. Why is this deal bad for America?
The merger itself is bad because it creates what is called a horizontal consolidation. Right now in the wireless space, which has been pretty innovative over the last years, we have fewer and fewer players. And if you merge AT&T with T-Mobile, which is the number two largest provider with the number four largest provider, you're creating what's called a market duopoly. The Emerge AT&T entity and Verizon, which is the other large player in this, would basically control almost 80% of market share. And so this merger would be, you know, equal to having BP merge with Texaco, Exxon, Chevron, ExxonMobil, Chevron, and a number of other players in the oil industry. It's a merger that is so out of scale that it recalls the sort of monopoly days of Ma Bell. And the problem with monopoly and the problem with having so few choices in the marketplace is that they drive up prices, they drive down services, and they basically control what is a very important sector in our economy. It's not just we're not just using cell phones, you know, to call our relatives, but more and more people, and disproportionately people in minority communities, use smartphones as their first point of access to the internet. And so, for such an important tool, we need regulators at the Department of Justice and the Federal Communications Commission to look at the antitrust implications here, to look at the implications of a failed marketplace for competition, and decide whether there needs to be a stronger role for consumer safeguards and regulation.
The African American Coalition has recently announced its support of the AT&T T-Mobile merger. The reason that we're doing this story today is because the Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation, the National Coalition.
The
National Gay and Lesbian Chamber of Commerce and a litany of grassroots organizations are all starting to endorse the merger. And what a lot of people are saying cynically is they're being bought out by AT&T to endorse it with the promise that this merger is going to help minority voices be heard.
Well, I would say just a minor correction there. There's also a litany of grassroots organizations that have come out against this merger. And I think the one significant difference there is the one that you mentioned, is that AT&T, which is not only powerful in lobbying Washington, has a foundation arm that spreads money in the form of grants to literally tens of thousands of not-for-profit organizations around the world. And in particular, they target groups that might be helpful at a later date in persuading Washington that there is some form of grassroots support. And unfortunately, Gladys has come out in support of this merger. And apparently there is some division within the GLAAD board about whether or not they should have done this.
How do you see that endorsement? Do you see it as they got bribed, or
well,
what?
I mean, it's you know, we've been looking at it to some extent, and I think maybe bribe is too strong a term. I think that you need to look at the composition of their board. There are board members there who have a history with AT&T. You need to look at their 990 form, which is a form that records all of the contributions that they receive, and draw your own conclusions. I think there's some evidence there to suggest that this was a decision that was not made in the legitimate interests of their members, but was a decision that was a result of some strong-arming from the top down.
Well, I believe they got $25,000 from AT&T, which some people say that's not a whole lot of money when you really look at it.
Yeah, it's chump change. I mean, you know, for an organization of that size and as a percentage of their annual budget, $25,000,
But is that $25,000 this year? And then, you know, what is it next year?
It's the promise of more money. So, I mean, so you saying that it doesn't serve their members, Tim?
Well, I don't think it does. I mean, you're looking at a consolidation of the industry that would lead to higher prices. I mean, I don't think it serves anyone. It leads to higher prices and fewer choices in the marketplace. And I think what happens with a lot of these organizations, and that, like, you know, obviously the GLAAD's primary concern does not revolve around telecommunications policy. They have a lot of other irons in the fire and things that they're working on there. But so oftentimes when it comes to issues that they don't have an expertise in, they rely on others. They rely on others to say, you know, what's right and wrong. And I fear that they have been listening to the wrong people. And in many ways, this is a failure of organizations like ours. I mean, we are a not-for-profit organization that has a very limited budget by comparison to AT&T. And we do have a very extensive outreach operation, but perhaps the lobbyists at AT&T and their allies have gotten to the people on the board of GLAAD before we had the opportunity to set them straight. I think you can look at this merger. I mean, for example, AT&T is saying that this merger will be good for competition. And I know of no merger in the history of mergers where you take away one competitor and fold it under another that increases competition. I mean, AT&T is saying that this merger will be good for jobs, when in fact the T-Mobile and out of their headquarters in Seattle and others have suggested that as many as 20,000 jobs will be as lost as a result of this merger as T-Mobile employees are laid off for redundancy. So there is a lot of misinformation that is being spread by AT&T. And our hope, and perhaps even our failure, was that we didn't get to GLAAD to have a conversation with them before this decision was rendered.
Well, you know, in a lot of ways, actually, I think this controversial decision on GLAAD to support it is actually going to get a lot of LGBT people involved in the fight for network neutrality.
Well, I hope so. And, you know, we welcome working with people who are concerned about this issue, and we have a lot of resources available via our own coalition website at SaveTheInternet.com where people can learn more about this.
Over here, they're saying that the merger will increase access to domestic partner benefits, family medical bereavement leave, and survivorship benefits for thousands of LGBT employees if they're still working after the merger. I mean, because if you don't have a job, you don't really have to worry about all that stuff.
Well, right now, T-Mobile employs 40,000 people in the United States, and the expectation is that half of those will receive pink slips. So, you know, I can't speak to the benefits of AT&T working for AT&T compared to T-Mobile, but I do know that. That this merger will result in widespread job loss.
Well, I think they have the merger is supported by some people working in unions because they feel as though AT&T allows people to form unions if they want to, whereas T-Mobile does not.
Yes, I mean AT&T has a partnership with the Communications Workers of America that is a more open to organizing than T-Mobile, and I think that you need to weigh the benefits of that against the real risks of widespread job loss here. So,
what happens if the merger doesn't happen? Will T-Mobile be going out of business, or will they be offered to Sprint, for example?
I think, you know, T-Mobile is still a profitable business, and I think that they can continue without this. I mean, our hope is to see more than just T-Mobile out there. We'd like to see more choices amongst carriers out there. Right now, there are really four primary providers that control the lion's share of the marketplace. And there are a lot of decisions that can be made at the federal level, for example, in how we allocate spectrum. Spectrum, of course, is the public airwaves over which on which these carriers rely to create more local competitors in the space. And so there's a lot of decisions that could be made by the FCC to open up the marketplace and to create more competition and choice for consumers rather than simply rubber stamp a merger that does the opposite.
It just, I guess, you know, in covering this, we've been covering this for the last 5 years, and recently it's been really befuddling me why so many gay and lesbian people who use the internet every day, from dating to looking for porn to looking at news and finding each other, wouldn't feel threatened by the network neutrality or the fact that the AT&T T-Mobile merger would reduce that. We have some questions and comments here from our friends on Facebook on Feast of Fun. Thomas Pardee wants to know, I'm all for net neutrality, and I get the threat that this monopoly could pose if AT&T wanted it to get all evil on us, but do you really think this whole rust-up is Fox News-style fear-mongering? Do we have any real reason we think we'd lose freedom of expression and access, or is this just internet's doomsday picture you guys are painting, just a worst-case scenario theory? Just because AT&T would be the biggest player doesn't mean it would be the only player. Won't the internet will always be bigger than AT&T?
I would say that we have reached a point in the history of the internet where we are at a critical juncture in the history of the internet where all of the rules that were created over the last 40 years can be dramatically changed, and we have a real threat that the internet could go the way of other disruptive, and what used to be called disruptive media that went before it. I mean, radio used to be considered very revolutionary because it was widely accessible, and over time it came under the control of very few corporations. I think you need only to look to history to see how revolutionary technology, and in particular revolutionary communications technology, has been shut down and handed over to a very few powerful players. I think the threat is real. I think that some of the revelations that we've seen with the internet over the last, in particular, 15 years when it became really publicly accessible, may be no more. And free speech is definitely a part of that. Net neutrality is really the antidote to the sort of corporate media control that pervades all other mass media. If you look at television, you look at radio, you look at newsprint, you see a consolidation under the control of very few corporate players. The internet remains free in as much as we have net neutrality as the basic operating principle.
Timothy, did you actually get a chance to read the letter from GLAAD and from the National Gay and Lesbian Chamber of Commerce in support of the AT&T merger?
I have read some of GLAAD's material on it. I have not read the complete letter.
Let me ask you a couple of their points. These are the main points why they say they endorsed it. They said, if approved, the merger, it will expand the availability of true high-speed access to millions of Americans who do not currently have it. True or false?
False. That availability is already out there. AT&T says that they will expand their reach to more than 95% of the population, but right now, according to a report published by the FCC, that already exists. And so that is, I can cite the line in AT&T's own press release that line was pulled.
Okay. And they also say this new deployment, so creating this high-speed access, also holds the promise of dramatic improvements in healthcare, because it's cheaper to go see a doctor if you can just do it online, education, the arts, and the overall economy. What do you think about that?
I think, as we said on our website, that AT&T is trying to create a fairy tale version of this merger. I don't think that improvements in healthcare and such other essential services, and even in the arts and culture, are dependent upon the FCC and the Department of Justice signing off on this merger. It's it's a bit of a fantasy to think that these two companies merging to become one will solve all of those problems or even create significant improvements, and that without this merger, those would be lacking.
Matthew Munson wants to know, I am a T-Mobile customer, and I'm afraid that AT&T will make mobile phone service more expensive for me. And AT&T says, oh, there is competition with Metro PCS and Cricket, but their phones generally suck. No iPhone, BlackBerry, or kick-ass Android phones. And you can't even use them in places like the UK or Australia, let alone United States.
Well, there are two things there. One, for AT&T to say that companies like Metro PCS are competition is sort of like Walmart saying that your mom-and-pop five and dime store is competition. They are so small by comparison that it's a bit of a false comparison. The other one, mm-hmm. in reference to prices, the average T-Mobile customer right now pays 25% less for his or her cell phone service than the average AT&T customer. So if this merger were to go through, the 34 million T-Mobile customers that are out there will more than likely, I'd say it's highly likely, if not absolutely likely, see their rates go up by as much as 25% as soon as their contract expires.
Wow. For the same service.
Well, I mean, you know, AT&T claims that it'll be a different service, but it will basically be whatever service the merge entity decides to provide.
How much money, is there a way of knowing how much money AT&T is spending on getting all these grassroots organizations to send letters of support to the FCC versus upgrading their actual phone lines?
It's hard to get an exact number. I mean, a lot of this money is distributed through the AT&T Foundation. And as a foundation, they are obligated to report their spending via what's called a Form 990. So you can actually go on, you know, some foundation databases and pull that. You can see a list of the organizations that they give to. And they give to, you know, everything from, you know, the Girl Scouts of Texas to United Way chapters around the country. So you can get a number from that. But in addition, AT&T has a practice of putting the local AT&T rep on local chambers of commerce around the country, and they use that sort of local influence to organize local organizations and local businesses to sign off on these sorts of mergers.
God, it sounds so sinister.
Well, you know, it's I think a fundamental failing of our democracy in many ways that we allow corporations as powerful as AT&T to dictate public policy on this issue, and they've been very successful at it, and to the point that it's almost taken for granted in Washington that public policy is made to protect the bottom line of the private sector as opposed to actually serve the public. And I think at the SEC and at the Department of Justice that they need to revisit this merger and take a look at it in terms of, you know, what the public needs. And what we need, what the public needs, are cheaper access to higher speed internet connections, both wireless and wired. And I think, you know, our economy is increasingly a networked economy, and freedom of speech is increasingly reliant on our ability to get online and share with others. And so these are important issues that members of government should be taking more seriously than simply padding the bottom lines of very profitable corporations.
We are in this nation number 15 in internet access among nations of the world. We're number 15 in internet access and internet speeds. Why do other countries, you know, Korea, some places, Japan, have faster internet access, wireless access, than we do in this country? Why are we, you know, I thought America invented the internet and invented the cellular phone. Why are we dragging our feet behind?
Well, it's almost the same answer that I gave to you the earlier question. It's because we've allowed for powerful industry players to dictate policy as far as the communications infrastructure is concerned. If you look at the success stories in Europe and in Asia where they have created faster, cheaper connections for more of their citizens, you'll find a stronger role of government in setting sort of open access guidelines or in guiding choice in the marketplace, creating more competitive policy. In fact, the FCC recently commissioned Harvard to do an extensive global study on this, and their findings last year were that it is exactly because we have allowed what is a duopoly, cable and phone companies, to control policy in the United States, that we lack the kind of choices and services and qualities of speed that people are seeing in places like South Korea and Japan and Denmark and France and Spain. I mean, they have managed through policy making and working with the private sector there to get their priorities straight. And again, I think those priorities are making broadband access affordable and accessible to as many Americans as possible.
Well, Timothy, thank you so much for talking to us. And, you know, again, the website is savetheinternet.com. We urge you to visit there and sign the petition and join the coalition of over 2 million people who have banded together with thousands of real nonprofit organizations, businesses, and bloggers to protect internet freedom. We thank you so much for all the work that you guys are doing.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks. Please.
Definition. I said, tell me luxury's definition. So tell me luxury's definition. Must be the whispering that everyone listen. I've been told that money rules the world. I said, I've been told that money rules the world. I've been told that money rules the world. No word. Yeah.
That is the song Luxury's Definition by Eric Hyman from his album All for Show. Next up is Jarrett Barrios, the president of GLAAD, the Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation. GLAAD has recently come under fire because of their support of the AT&T T-Mobile merger. Hello, Jarrett. Are you there?
Hello.
Hi, Jarrett Barrios. This is Fausto Fernandez.
And Mark Filian from Feast of Fun. How are you today?
I'm great.
This actually is a much clearer connection. I don't know why that is, at least on my end. Nice to talk to you guys.
Nice to talk to you, too. You've been pretty busy this week, huh?
We've had a busy week. There's a lot of things happening at GLAAD. I don't know if you followed our Jose Luis in Censura action. We've had some great progress getting a couple of advertisers to pull out and a network to drop the show in Miami, which is a big Spanish language market. And then there's obviously the merger, and there's a number of other campaigns going on, New York marriage and the ballot initiative in Minnesota. So pretty busy.
Before we get into people being mad at GLAAD, let me ask you about the show Jose Luis in Censura. When you write articles using slur words in English, you use asterisks to disguise the word, but when GLAAD writes about it in Spanish, they don't censor any words out.
That's the case in some instances. That's a really perceptive comment, because we've been able to, in English language media, get it to a place where people understand and are beginning to embrace Greeking out certain letters so that people know what the word is, but we're not actually repeating it. In Spanish, oftentimes there's not even a consensus because of regionalisms in Spanish about what the words are. So, for example, I'll use the words for you. Joto is how you would say F-A-G-G-O-T in Mexican Spanish, but you would say it a totally different word, maricón, in Cuban or Puerto Rican Spanish. And so what we find, because the networks often are aired nationally with, you know, there's more Caribbean Spanish in the East, and it's just has proven hard for us.
So you're still sorting that out.
Hey, calm down, Jarrett. This is a family show, you know.
Oh my God, you're not taping right now, are you?
We are taping. This is live.
Oh, you didn't tell me that. Oh my God, I said these things I said it in Spanish, so hopefully nobody speaks Spanish.
We have a lot of Latino listeners,
but they have a good sense of humor. So, why did you guys feel the need to endorse the controversial AT&T merger, considering that in the past your group hasn't commented on corporate mergers?
Quick question for you. We have, just in terms of time, I have until, they booked it for half an hour, so I've got something right at the half hour, and I just wanted to, so I'm ready to get started, but I just didn't want to drop off and surprise you guys at the end.
That's okay. Fine. Okay. Yeah.
Excellent. Okay. Let's dive right in. Fausto, go ahead.
So why did you guys feel the need to endorse the controversial merger, considering that in the past your group hasn't commented on corporate mergers?
We actually have commented on mergers in the past, and this is one of the pieces of misinformation that it's great to have a chance to talk to you about. Not often, but about a year ago, we began creating at GLAAD a policy committee that looks at things at the board level and began thinking strategically about how media advocacy, what that looks like in a policy advocacy context. One of the first instances of that was last summer. You may recall Comcast was trying to purchase and did successfully purchase NBC. We had a lot of concerns about that merger. In particular, there's general concerns about consolidation of the media industry, but that's sort of less GLAAD's wheelhouse, right? Sort of antitrust is not what GLAAD does. In that case, GLAAD is very and has been continues for 25 years. We've been involved in LGBT content in network programming, particularly primetime programming, but really all programming. And we have something called the Network Responsibility Index, which tracks how many gay characters there are, gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender characters there are on primetime television. And we have tracked NBC for the 7 years we'd done it, and they were fourth out of five of the top five networks, and really we thought should improve. And so we raised a lot of concerns. We did a filing before the Federal Communications Commission. I can get you the link if you're interested in. Rich can get it for you. But we had some serious concerns about that when we filed last summer.
When it came to the Comcast-NBC Universal merger, you guys simply wrote a letter of concern. But when it came to this AT&T-T-Mobile merger, you guys are in full support of it.
We are absolutely. Our view is on balance. And for us, in our wheelhouse, again, we do media advocacy. So there are certainly reasons. Other people are supporting it. There's over 300 groups that are supporting it. Other LGBT organizations supporting it for labor reasons, for economy reasons. Our view is that it's really about speed and functionality, which supports increased engagement.
What are you judging that speed and balance on? I mean, where did you get that kind of information? Because most of the people talking about the internet saying this merger between AT&T and T-Mobile is going to create this giant behemoth, and that we're going to have worse internet service and pay more for it.
Conversion from 3 to 4G more universally. I would also note that there's conversations around spectrum issues that gets resolved. Again,
the United States, just let me remind you, with all due respect, Jarrett, that the United States is right now 15th in internet connectivity and broadband speeds, and most tech experts and pundits and writers credit AT&T and the other telecommunications companies with dragging their feet in adopting these speeds and spending too much of their money supporting grassroots organizations, which they really should be spending their money upgrading their networks.
I'm not going to disagree with you in terms of upgrading their networks. It's our belief that those on the T-Mobile side are going to see better service and conversion to 4G faster, and that means better engagement. I also want to mention functionality, access to iPhones, and in general, smartphone technology with better apps means more people engaging, and that's something which we believe. And I want to just note that there are a lot of people with opinions on this. Some people are going to disagree with us. Some are going to agree with us, but for different reasons.
But the overwhelming public, 2 million people are signing petitions against this merger. Every single tech-based organization, writers and bloggers, Dan Savage calls the move from the support insane, and he thinks everything's going to get better. Daniel Villarreal from Queerty, he says GLAAD cannot support one with also supporting the other, whether they disagree or not. Does your group support network neutrality?
No. So a little bit about GLAAD. Mm-hmm. We are a media advocacy organization. We don't endorse legislation or regulations. So we haven't taken a position in net neutrality. I think it's fair to say we certainly don't support the telecom position on that because it's fair access to the internet is important, as is though functionality and speed. And again, I'm not going to argue that there's a clear argument on either side. I think there's a balance here, and on balance, we felt that this was something which would benefit consumers that are impacted by this. But there's certainly arguments on the other side.
Well, I guess my question is though, how did you guys come to this decision? Because it seems to be, and a lot of people are accusing GLAAD of this, and certainly Lori Piper, a former board member of GLAAD, went on Sirius Radio on Tuesday and said what everyone's thinking, that GLAAD traded favors or cash with a board member who was an AT&T employee, you know, right, by backing the merger. Because right, it's on everyone's mind.
There are no AT&T employees on the board. There's somebody who used to be an AT&T employee currently on the board. But I think what's probably most important to recognize is, you know, sometimes we agree with the people who support the organization, individuals and corporations, and sometimes we disagree. But we make our decisions based on our beliefs and what we think is best to have the best advocacy possible and help achieve full equality for the LGBT community. So in the case of net neutrality, we didn't agree with this particular supporter, AT&T. In the case of this merger, we agree, not because it's AT&T, but because we believe functionality and speed are going to help increase the impact of our advocacy work.
Based on AT&T's word, though, have you guys done any independent conclusion?
You're absolutely right. Well, no, not based solely on their word, based on what we've been able to get, which includes their information. And we're following it. I'm very interested. And I want to raise there are concerns out there, which particularly in terms of pricing, in terms of, you know, downloadable content, if you know, you sort of set limits on that, that actually could be a real impediment to engagement.
Well, you know, if they become one of the duopolies of telecommunications in this country, how much leverage will GLAAD actually have with that with that company?
You know, I again, not quite a duopoly. Verizon and Sprint haven't merged yet. But your concerns are important, and I think those will be addressed. My hope is we have an active antitrust division that will look at those things and satisfy them.
Because what's really disturbing a lot of people is the fact that AT&T is being accused of buying the support for its merger from hundreds of grassroots organizations, yours included.
Right.
Do you feel like that with new information, with further research, that GLAAD would consider withdrawing its support of the merger?
I think what we're doing is, as we did in the NBC Comcast merger, is monitor how things go. We want to make sure, and by that I don't mean that we're going to switch, because what I mean is that we're going to look at information. We're going to see if our arguments are sort of as we expect. If they stick to the reasons we are supporting this, which is for functionality and for speed. We are not an antitrust organization. We are not an organization which is sort of engaged in broader levels. We are laser-focused in doing the work that we do so that we can do it well. We can't be all things to all people. But we can do is really try to change the media to make it a more inclusive place, an accepting and respectful place for LGBT people. And one of the ways, one of the most important ways we achieve that is through advocacy online. It used to be that people would pick up the phone or send a fax. People don't do that anymore. They go online. And they don't just go online. They use Facebook, they use Twitter, they use these devices. And they used to be, not so long ago, that it was at standalone computers. Now they do them on tablets, tablet technology like your iPad or a smartphone. And increasingly more effective apps. And as we're moving in that direction, the functionality of those smartphones and the speed with which to do it are going to be directly connected to people's ability and frequency of engagement. And we want to see that maximal. We want to see everybody in our community engaged in doing media advocacy work, and that's why we've supported this.
Well, based on AT&T's past record and history, they're not always good at keeping promises. Are you guys surprised? Are you guys what?
I'm sorry. Can you?
We're number 15th in the Fausto. We are number 15th in the world in terms of speed and connectivity, and it's been credited to the fact that even though a lot of people have invested in line fees, for example, on your phone bill, you pay a couple of bucks every month, so your telecommunications company will bill faster connections in your city. A lot of telecommunications companies, AT&T included, have not been upgrading their networks. So to say that we promise to do something is not as it's not the same thing as actually doing it.
That's a very good point.
Were you guys surprised by the negative response that you've been receiving?
We've had, I've received some emails. I've received about 30 emails from people who are concerned. I'm certainly always interested in what people have to say. But at the end of the day, there are a lot of folks who want GLAAD to be an antitrust organization or other things. I hear those concerns, and like I said at the beginning of the show, there are about 300 organizations which have chosen it thus far to support it, and they all have their reasons. There are a lot of organizations, don't know how many, that have chosen to oppose it. They have their reasons. Ours are pretty much about the functionality of the smartphones, their ability to increase engagement, and then speed, because that's directly connected to people's likelihood of taking the time and doing this important engagement.
If I buy you an iPhone, will you change GLAAD's position on the AT&T mobile merger? Well, I mean, actually, I should get you I'll get you a Verizon iPhone.
I was gonna say, I was about to say that if you bought me an iPhone, you know what you'd be doing.
I give you it's a Verizon iPhone, so it'll be faster.
Okay.
It'll actually work.
I would turn that down as a bit of a conflict of interest. However, I'd be happy to donate it to charity.
Does GLAAD worry that the negative press over this controversial support overshadow its work? Do you guys feel like a sense of remorse or regret?
That's a great...
Why even weigh in on this in the first place, even if you support it?
You know, Fausto, we talked about, at the beginning of the show, the example of Jose Luis Insensuda. We didn't talk about, but I could give you a lot of other examples, the work that we're doing right now in New York State to secure marriage equality, the work that we're doing among Lutherans to secure full equality and equal treatment for Lutherans in their faith tradition, for gay Lutherans in their faith tradition. We're doing extraordinary work in the transgender community, doing education. And among Spanish speakers, we're about to roll out this impressive, really most extensive research ever on talking to Latinos in this country about LGBT issues, both in Spanish and English. That kind of work is transformative, will be transformative, will give tools to movement advocates, across the country.
Mm-hmm.
That's the work that we're going to keep talking about. It's connected to everything we do. People can certainly write off an organization for one position. I think that's unfortunate. I think the most important thing is to look on balance what they contribute, and it's certainly my hope that people who don't agree with us on this will agree to disagree and will appreciate that the value adds we are doing in so many other ways are making a difference. I can only, I can only count on them to use their best judgment.
There was a letter that was written to the FCC in January that had your signature on it. It seemed to come from GLAAD in support of net neutrality. What happened with that?
In opposition to net neutrality.
Oh,
yep. No,
well, there was one that actually was in support of net neutrality, and so
you mean in support of the telecom position, right?
No, then you guys then later said that letter had been forged, letter that everybody's talking about.
Let me clarify. Okay. I think there was a letter that had been submitted. I think it was January 4th or January 5th. This is like a year and 8 months ago.
Mm-hmm, about a year ago.
Well over. It was like January of 2010. And it sort of supported the telecom industry's position on net neutrality, which was not GLAAD's position. And in fact, GLAAD at the time and still doesn't endorse bills and doesn't endorse regulatory actions. So it would have been impossible for us to do that. After an investigation, we determined that it was an administrative error internally at GLAAD, and I'll own that. And we withdrew the letter. At the time we withdrew the letter, we didn't know that. And so I was, you can imagine, reading a letter in a public submission with your name on it that you had never seen and that wasn't your signature. After we did an internal investigation, we realized it was an internal error, an administrative error.
So somebody just managed to get access to your letterhead, or what happened?
No. It was an administrative issue, and it was became a personnel issue that was managed, and obviously it's a personnel issue, so I dealt with it.
Well, regardless of what happens, I think that the controversy over this raises the fact that LGBT people need to be involved deeper in the fight in support of net neutrality. And, you know,
a great point.
Save the Net Foundation says you cannot support the AT&T T-Mobile merger and not be fighting against net neutrality, which means with us that we'd like to set you up on a date.
A date?
A date? Because
what's
you're single.
What's my boyfriend going to say? What's
you're single. Well, you're recently divorced. I looked at your Wikipedia entry.
A year and a half ago divorced. I got a boyfriend now. What
so,
do you think?
Timothy Carr, we don't know if he's gay or not, but he represents the Save the Net Foundation for the Free Press nonprofit group.
If he's straight, I don't mean to discriminate, but if he's straight, I'll do it.
Well, I think he's a player.
I'll have some pictures at home.
I think he's straight, but I don't want to speak
for him. But you know, I think it would be a good idea for the two of you to actually talk to each other. And, you know, Timothy says that one of the failures of Save the Net is that they've not done a good enough job to reach out to grassroots organizations. And so we'd like to set you guys up on a date. I think you're both in New York City.
I'm in L.A., but
you're in L.A.?
I'm in New York frequently.
So you guys can, you know, have some tea on us and meet each other and see if there's some common ground that the two organizations can come together. Because really, there is a need for LGBT people to get involved in net neutrality. And, you know, regardless of what happens to GLAAD, we think that this is a very important issue. And we certainly hope that your organization would change its mind. One more time, will you change it? Please?
You are great. I got to go on my first date before I get married, my friend.
If I say, change your room and time.
Will you give me Tim's information?
Because Tim's cute.
Yeah, but Tim might be straight.
We don't know if he's straight or gay or not.
Let's not call it a date. Let's just say a meeting so that you can,
Since we're on tape, I think that's a safer.
Yeah, a meeting. Because I
feel
as
though. Not get to meet me when I get home.
He could definitely learn stuff from you, and you could learn stuff from him because he's very well versed on net neutrality.
Because a lot of people are saying it's like criticizing GLAAD, saying that your media awards this year, you only had media awards for bloggers. And it was like a handful of stuff, and you know, LGBT voices.
I'm sorry, what was the criticism exactly, Fausto?
The media awards this year,
we got praise. One of the things this year about our media awards, we have become increasingly tech savvy. We've begun to stream it online, so that you don't have to pay to see the media awards show. People, we had over 3,000 people in our first year of doing that.
That's wonderful. But what people would like to see acknowledgement. People would like to see acknowledgement for where LGBT voices are right now and where audiences are turning to. And part of the criticism of an organization like GLAAD, a media advocacy watchdog group, is that audiences are not necessarily turning on television, going to the movies, or even listening to the radio. They're actually involved in Twitter. They're watching YouTube videos. They're listening to podcasts. They're reading blogs. They'd like to see GLAAD be more involved in recognizing LGBT voices in new media, in podcasts, and tweeters.
So,
listen to me for one second, though. I would like to get you to commit to...
Fausto, the facts are important. I want to just tell you a couple of things on the record here.
Okay.
I totally agree with you, which is why for the first time ever this year, we had a blogger category.
That's correct.
We had never done that before. And you know what? It was an experiment, and I think it was an experiment that worked. And we're hoping to expand in new media, and in particular, do that in San Francisco, which is a sort of a new media center, as opposed to New York and L.A., which is more traditional.
So here's my categories I'd like to see you guys award. Best Twitterer. Get your pen out.
Like what? Best tweet?
Best tweets. Absolutely. Best Twitter. Microblogging. Okay? Best social network for LGBT people.
Best tweet?
Both. You know, it's 140 characters. You don't have to, you know, sweat it too much.
Yeah, well.
Best social network.
You 2,000 tweets.
Well, you allow your user base to submit those.
Best YouTube channel.
Best YouTube channel, best video blogger, best audio podcast. Because listen, the People's Choice Podcast Awards.
Is there a conflict of interest in you guys advocating that one?
Oh, we wouldn't win it. I'm sure it would
go
to someone else.
We won't win it, believe me. But definitely, you know, best blogger, but also best photographer, best online photo blog, best social network for LGBT people, best social network advocacy. Is it Facebook? Is it Twitter? Is it, is it Groupon?
We actually do social media campaign awards during the advertising awards in the fall. But the other ones are great ideas. It really does come down to be honest, I'd love to do a lot of these. It does come down to resources, both volunteer resources and actually the cash to to do all this. And I, not to end our wonderful interview on a too sober of a note, one of my big challenges when I started at GLAAD, the media awards had really become very expensive to produce, very lavish affairs, and you know, and the organization needed to balance its books.
Just get Queen Latifah to host it and do it in your room. Yeah, like they did with the daytime
Emmys. You get her for me. So, you know, I've cut the expenses of the Media Awards 30% since I started, right? That's a lot to still produce an event for 30% less. And so doing that and adding awards, it was, we were able to do Blogger this year. But you know what? I commit to you. I'll look into that. I know that our social media folks, our digital director, Allison, and others, really, you know, they would probably love to do this sort of thing. So look for more on that one.
Jarrett Barrios, thank you so much for talking to us.
All righty. Talk to you soon now. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That's Jarrett Barrios, which translates to neighborhood, his last name. He's the president of GLAAD, lives in Los Angeles, California. If you'd like to voice your opinion on the matter to GLAAD directly, write him at barrios@glad.org. That's spelled B-A-R-R-I-O-S at GLAAD. GLAAD, like the garbage bag, but with an extra A, .org. And make sure you voice your opinion. So let's go back to Daniel Villarreal, the day editor of Queerty, to get the last word and weigh in on all this. So, Daniel, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
So, I guess, what did we learn on today's show? We learned that we're going to set up Timothy and Jarrett on a date. Even though I think Timothy is actually heterosexually identified. We don't know.
We don't know.
But I think, you know, this underscores the fact that LGBT people need to be involved in supporting and saving the internet from the vicious telecommunications companies that are fighting very hard and spending a lot of money to limit it.
Mm-hmm. And so if we don't have the money to fight it, but we certainly have our voices. So, you know, what we have to get out there and work with people and make it happen, or else we're going to live in, what is it, like a corporate-controlled world.
It's going to be basically back to the days of AOL. I asked Jarrett Barrios over and over again, is this a mistake? Will you guys consider, you know, reconsider withdrawing your support of the merger? I even offered him to buy him an iPhone from Verizon. And he's like, that's bribery. And I'm like, oh, that's bribery, but this money that AT&T is giving you guys isn't? Come on. I have to say he was delightfully goofy, and that totally, I love that, you know? So maybe there is a nuance, maybe there is multiple truths to this approach. Who knows? What do you think?
You know, I think the most recent thing, like developments today, were that yesterday, Michael Signorelli had a former GLAAD board member, co-chair Lori Perper, on her show, and she basically led a smear campaign against GLAAD that had almost nothing to do with their statement on AT&T and T-Mobile. And today, Barrios was actually welcomed to Signorelli's show to, you know, respond to the claims that she made. And Signorelli, it seems at the last minute, had one of his board members, who's also a PR guy, you know, with him, and he wanted to bring him onto the show, which is kind of like inviting someone to a date, you know, at the very last minute. But Signorelli was like, yeah, no, like, you can't do that. And so Barrios withdrew. He decided not to appear on the show. I think he flubbed a really big opportunity there because, you know, I mean, if there were things he couldn't answer, then I think he could have been honest about that. But it was a real chance to really sort of rebut some of the things that she said that have kind of discredited, and I think even unfairly discredited GLAAD's, you know, work. Mm-hmm. At this point, I mean, Perper said that she wanted GLAAD to go ahead and dissolve because its brand is too tarnished. I think that's crap. You know, they're obviously not really great at messaging at this point, but I think there's still a lot of positive on the ground work that the media never even really covers. You know, I mean, probably 90% of their work is kind of grassroots, on field, you know, advocacy, education campaigns, things like that. And then the little, you know, niblets that the queer media tend to seize on tend to be these sort of bigger things, like, you know, the Kobe Bryant NBA slur and this merger thing, and then them going after you know, Glee for saying, you know, tranny, or South Park for saying.
Well, they seem celebrity obsessed. You know?
It comes across as celebrity obsessed because the only thing that we ever hear from them is like, you know, Madonna said something that offended everybody, you know, and it just comes across as like childish in a way, but they're actually doing a lot of stuff that, you know, and that was kind of interesting that they're doing so much stuff in other languages and cultures as well.
Totally. You know, I mean, and my thing is this, if they want to comment on the merger, fine, but at least be upfront with the reasons you're doing it. If you think that it's going to help advocacy work, if you think a faster internet's really going to help out queers and you know, giving good representations of them, cool, say that. Say how it's going
to
do that.
Well, I mean, they did that. I mean, that was in their letter to the FCC. My problem with this, though, is that what did they base that information on? Where did they get this, like, handwritten for them by somebody at AT&T? I don't know.
Well, that's exactly what it is, because it sounds like advertising copy.
Yeah.
You know, they may not actually admit to it, but it certainly comes across like that. And the fact that they don't, you know, we gave him the opportunity to address it, and he declined. So,
You know, if given the chance again, I mean, I would say that, you know, in order to release that letter, they should have premeditated that AT&T's net neutrality stance was mm-hmm. going to be an issue. And considering that issue, they should have said specifically or even theoretically how having that better service would allow them to do that. Not just that it would allow them to do it, but how specifically it would allow them to greater accomplish their mission. So, I think that's still the question everyone's asking.
So it could be just a case of really just profound ignorance about the state of the internet for them. And they just don't know, and they just accepted whatever was given to them at face value and said, okay, that's no problem. Oh, you're going to have better jobs for some gay people? Oh, that's wonderful. Oh, healthcare? We'll have more healthcare? Sure.
I can tell you one thing, though. Hmm. Google ain't going to be donating any money to GLAAD.
No.
After this? Are you kidding? They'd be crazy. Google is one of the largest, most vocal opponents of the AT&T merger, you know, because it hurts their ability to use the Android on those mobile phones.
Maybe Google should give them some money to get them to switch their opinion.
Yeah, you know, I mean, Google actually, of course, is really behind the It Gets Better campaign. And, I mean, it is possible they could give GLAAD an endowment of some sort with strings attached that allows them to continue on their good work that has nothing to do with the AT&T merger. But I think it will definitely be a tight spot for them. Mm-hmm.
Well, I certainly hope that they actually diversify their online media awards aspects, because, like, this past year he called it an experiment.
Yeah.
And I'm like, where are you guys, all you LGBT people, even Jarrett Barrios? He doesn't spend all his time watching television. He's on the internet chatting with his friends on Facebook. You know, he's reading Queerty. He's listening to video podcasts and audio podcasts. It's like, you know, so I think it's kind of strange that they haven't moved quickly enough and followed where the audiences are. Because, you know, at the end of the day, sometimes I feel like, who the hell cares what a television show does? Because we all can go on our blogs and rant about it and embarrass the hell out of them.
Yeah, but it's also, too, you need organizations like this to hold people's feet to the fire and be like, oh, you don't want to do that because if you know, you'll get people rallied against you.
Well, what's important about GLAAD, and that's one thing that I want to impress upon the listeners, is that they're actually meeting face-to-face with the people who create this content. And asking them, putting pressure, nicely and sometimes harshly, to change.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really, you know, should be the only thing that they do. It weighing in on the AT&T T-Mobile merger is a distraction and could ultimately cause the organization to come unraveling like a poorly knit sweater.
I agree. One quick thing. They just released a media report about diversity in, you know, television, and it was focused mostly on broadcast, like major networks, and then on a couple of cable networks like Showtime, HBO. They didn't really touch on the incredible lack of diversity in gay-only channels like Logo and Here. And going through those, anyone who's ever watched Logo or Here kind of knows that the whites still rule when it comes to those. So I would actually like to hear a little bit more about what GLAAD's doing to address diversity in our own community so that we have more bi, trans, and people of color in our media.
Well, I'm sure you're keeping it fresh and funky yourself, Daniel.
I'm trying.
Really, you know, we were so heartbroken when Queerty announced just how many months ago was it that they're just closing their doors forever? And it was really happy news, and especially that fact, because we love your writing, and that Queerty was able to open its doors again and exist as a snarky, sassy LGBT voice in the wilderness of the internet.
Well, thanks.
Yeah, and I think just as when Queerty closed, I ran into Scott Gantz, the guy from Gay Cities. He was at an event here in Chicago, and I remember talking about how Queerty closed, and I had no idea that he had taken over control. Just days later.
Maybe he kept that under his hat, but yeah. I'm really happy as well. When they closed, I was like, oh, am I going to have to do actual journalism? You know, and truth be told, a lot of people hated us for a lot of good reasons. A lot of people loved us for a lot of good reasons, but I don't think there's really anything quite like it in terms of kind of other queer blogs, so I'm really happy to have it back.
Well, and we need such a diversity of voices, you know. It's like, I just feel there's not enough good LGBT-oriented content in YouTube, on podcasts and blogs, and even good Twitter accounts. You know, there's like, you have to comb through a pile of garbage to find quality stuff. So
that's why we need people like you, garbage sifters. Just kidding.
Daniel, thank you so much for talking to us and for covering this and making sense of this very complicated story. Last question I have for you. You obviously support network neutrality.
Yes.
So what are you going to be doing about it?
You know, what I do is I try to stay well informed on the issue. And luckily, this whole, you know, GLAAD thing has really allowed me to inform other readers about it. We're going to have another article coming out about it this week that sort of makes sense about it and talks about some of the issues in net neutrality. So that's one thing. The other thing I'm really concentrating on is using, you know, the platform that Queerty gives me and that, you know, net neutrality gives me to incorporate more people of color, as I said, more bi, more trans, more lesbians, older people, HIV positive people, poorer people, so that we can give a voice to a more diverse array that actually represents the entire LGBT community instead of just what we tend to see on cable and network broadcast.
You know what I call those people?
Well, you know, I like...
I got a joke for you. You know what I call those people?
What?
Americans.
Not
that's
funny.
Kind of stupid.
That wasn't a joke.
Audience members. You know, I think it's silly that a lot of these people ignore these significant demographics, because it's like, in a diversity, you want to have diversity because it strengthens your company. It makes it more resilient to challenges. You know, it's like, activists and nonprofit groups that are encouraging these companies to be diverse are kind of redundant, because these companies are better off when these blogs as well, when they cover things diversely, when they try to expand their viewpoints.
So plus, there's just interesting as hell, to be honest. I mean, you know, queers coming from so many different people. Like, I would love to see a story about, you know, a black, Jewish, crippled, transgender, lesbian who's Muslim and, like, you know, like, all of that, like, who's HIV positive and poor and, like, you know, does, like, has an adopted child who's, you know, like, I want to see that story so bad. Like, you know, what could you learn from that? It'd be amazing. But
I'd rather see a story about the douchey gay guy who runs a very well-funded tech startup who can't decide where to spend his summer months, Fire Island or Nantucket.
I think we have just the show for you.
Yes.
Thank you so much for talking to us, Daniel.
Thank you, Daniel.
Thank you. Thank you, guys. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And that is our show on network neutrality, the AT&T merger, and the future of GLAAD. I think we actually convinced them not to withdraw their support for the AT&T T-Mobile merger, but to include more new media and rich media categories in their awards.
And maybe take a stance on net neutrality. Maybe.
They need to take a stand on it. But yeah, that would, you know, put their funding, you know, it would be ridiculous not to consider the fact that their stance is not tied to the fact that they receive significant amount of money from AT&T. To say that is disingenuous, I think.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can characterize it any way you want to, but money does talk.
Right.
And AT&T is spending a lot of money that they should be spending on their networks on, buying influence.
Well, I'm sure it's, you know, then they said, hey, we have a bleeping golden opportunity here, to paraphrase Governor Blagojevich, who's right now on trial.
Former Governor Blagojevich.
Yeah, I think once you're governor, they always just say governor, don't they? Isn't that your title?
Unless you get impeached.
It's like President Bush is always President Bush.
If you get yanked out of office, do you get to keep the title?
Sure.
I got to take President that TR Nixon, back. Yeah, I guess is it former President Nixon or
once you're president, they just call you president. I mean, they can refer to you as former president.
Even when you're in jail.
Yes, it doesn't matter.
Here you go, Governor Blagojevich. Here's some, sardines for you.
Well, and I think they were surprised at the reaction that they got from people.
You think they were surprised?
Absolutely, I think so, yeah.
It was hum.
You know? Well, I think it's like, who looks at those FCC things, you know?
People on the internet.
Yeah.
And if you're not on the internet, if you're not reading these blogs, if you're not actually like checking out a lot of this rich content that there is out there, you probably are missing out on stuff. Right. And I don't fault any person, any organization for not keeping up with the times when it comes to new media and social media, because they're busy working hard to do their original mission. The problem is that when these very strong, well-funded corporations get involved with these nonprofit groups, these activist groups, and they start putting intense amount of pressure on them.
Yeah, and so they put a smiley face. They ask them to put a smiley face on their evil plans.
And AT&T to me strikes me as the core of evil. They even have the Death Star from Star Wars as their corporate logo. If that is not enough to say one ring to rule them all, they mean a ringtone, but it's still one ring tone to rule them all. You know, they Verizon, what's really interestingly to me is that a lot of AT&T's success and position comes from the success of the iPhone. And Verizon was initially, and T-Mobile were actually offered the iPhone first and declined it.
Wow. Why would they decline something like that?
But,
they couldn't handle it?
Because some people characterize Apple as too intense, too draconian for the terms. You know, they wanted too much control, and AT&T saw a golden opportunity to dominate the telecommunications sphere. Now, the iPhone is on the Verizon, and it is available on AT&T.
But it wasn't for years.
No, it wasn't for years. And people are actually saying that the next iPhone actually is going to be available on a lot other carriers as well.
Oh, really? Wonderful. Yeah.
Which is what the iPhone should have been in the first place. Apple, if you're listening.
Wow.
Jeez. I blame Apple for all this. If you would have made the iPhone available to everyone in the first place, we would have not be dealing with this problem.
Somebody like Apple computer will certainly be affected by something like net neutrality because they'll charge you a little extra to be able to download music.
How can you use your iCloud account if AT&T is saying, not so fast. That'll be a dollar extra. And those dollars add up.
They do. Speaking of dollars, I want to remind the listeners, we can't do this show without your support. So please visit feastoffun.com/donate and make a contribution to our ongoing website development costs.
Do you think today's show was original, cutting edge programming? I think it was.
Yeah.
You know, look, I have to say that we did a remarkable job, applause to ourselves, for pushing net neutrality and pushing this agenda forward and splashing some cold water on GLAAD's face, which ultimately I'd like to see GLAAD survive this and thrive and be the organization that it's meant to be.
Right. I want to do a shout out to Robert Radio, who first turned me on to what was happening with GLAAD and the ATT.
So, and certainly America Blog.
Yes.
Jim Verraros. What was his name?
He's got a strange...
Jim Aravos.
Aravos, yes.
Jim Verraros from America Blog. Thank you so much for breaking the story and to all the bloggers, including certainly Dan Savage. And a lot of other people who've spread the word around.
He didn't laugh at your Dan Savage joke, did he?
I thought it was funny. I know the audience laughed.
Because I wrote it.
Yes, we write
He's
jokes.
Like, I don't know if I should laugh at that.
It's funny. Why not laugh?
Yeah, poor Dan. Can he complain about anything anymore? Because don't worry, it'll get better.
It's going to get better. I can imagine that his boyfriend at home, he's like, or his kid.
Husband.
His husband.
Or whatever.
His son is at home and Dan comes home from work, tired, cranky, you know, and he goes, son, I told you to clean up your room. When are you going to do that? And says, don't worry, Dad. It gets better. This will happen to you too. The curse of love, of the curse of parenthood. It'll happen to you too. Mm-hmm. We're going to leave you here with a song, Turn It Around, by Tom Goss from his album, Turn It Around. People,
turn it around.
Turn it around. The song is available on our website, Feast of Fun. 5% of your iTunes Music Store purchases go to support the podcast. We can't do it without your support. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Pillion.
Bye, everyone. And dive up to your ears now. Take that whisper in your hand. Turn it back now. Sing it to me loud. Turn it.